Where can we debate today's big issues without getting attacked for speaking our minds? 1A provides a safe, smart place for tough conversations every weekday, and the Friday News Roundup breaks down the week's top stories. I'm Joshua Johnson. Check out the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. On this episode, we'll discuss a murder mystery with some murder mystery experts. Murder on the Orient Express is Kenneth Branagh's new Agatha Christie remake, starring Branagh as the famous, heavily mustachioed detective Hercule Poirot. The cast is packed with familiar faces.
We got sleeping cars filled with famous actors. We got your Johnny Depp and Judi Dench, Michelle Pfeiffer, Penelope Cruz, Daisy Ridley, Leslie Odom Jr., and many more, any of whom could be a murderer. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. On this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, we'll talk a little bit about Murder on the Orient Express, we've got lots of facial hair to discuss, and we've got a few very fun recommendations for cozy murder mysteries, which may or may not also be set on trains. So don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lyft, reminding listeners that they could be relaxing in a Lyft ride right now, with their eyes closed, listening to Beethoven, or whale sounds, or a babbling brook, or something else relaxing. Lyft provides rides as relaxing as the buttery smooth voice of a public radio announcer, because riding is just a more relaxing way to drive. Lyft, it matters how you get there. Download and ride today.
Before we get going, let's introduce our guests. Barry Hardiman is an editor at Weekend Edition. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
And over in Boston, our pal Margaret H. Willison is a librarian and one of the podcasters behind Appointment Television and the Two Bossy Dames newsletter. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Stephen.
Now, I'm going to start with Barry. Did this version of Murder on the Orient Express work for you?
That's a tough question, because it's not that it worked. It's that it didn't not work.
I will confess I'm confused.
Right. So it's not great.
Okay.
But I truly enjoyed about the first hour of it and giggled and rolled my eyes and enjoy, you know, I saw it with my dad and we both,
yep,
you know, sort
makes
of
sense.
Like, it was like a good family film,
sure.
You know, I mean, that's probably the last time I saw a movie with my dad was probably like E.T. So that probably contributed to my enjoyment. I like seeing every new face that's famous appear. I like trains. I liked when the scenery went from English Patient to Anna Karenina. Like, I love all that stuff. And so it felt like I was, again, I know I've used this a lot on the show, but this, it was like a cover band of a song I like.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great cover band. There are better cover bands. Mm-hmm. Albert Finney, certainly.
Right.
But I, you know, I really, it was not until we, you know, we got to the interminable denouement, which was like the denouement from hell that I really started to not enjoy it. But I also, like, we got extra popcorn. I was comfortable. Like, I enjoyed it, guys.
Hmm. Now, for those who aren't familiar, I mean, this is not only is this an Agatha Christie story, but it's a remake of a 1974 movie,
mm-hmm,
also with a huge, sprawling all-star cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got your John Gielgud and your every big actorly name was in this 1974 movie, and this one is sort of updating, but it's still set in the 30s,
yep,
on a train. Mm-hmm. One of these, you know, you've got this contained setting.
Mm-hmm.
One of these people is murdered,
mm-hmm,
and everybody's a suspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
mm-hmm,
just for those who haven't seen the 1974 mm-hmm movie, I mean, part of what we're dealing with is there is another major reference point that this movie is echoing.
And also just another, you know, it's, I don't want to spoil any outcomes, but this is a very, very, very famous outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like the fact of not updating it, but sort of bringing it to a new generation that probably won't read the book, maybe hasn't seen the 1974 movie, is like, ding, it's this kind of mystery. And everybody that knows it will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of writing about this movie, about whether this movie is necessary. I think that's the wrong question. It's just a weird question to ask about a movie. However, does this film justify its existence? It's a different question, a related question. And I got to say, for me, the answer was no. Not only because of the 1974 film, but also because of an episode of Agatha Christie's Poirot starring David Suchet, which also took this same thing. And if you're comparing Poirot's, there was a Peter Ustinov, Death on the Nile, I think, where
yeah,
he does
it. Yeah, so good.
It's really good. But Suchet's performance was very controlled, rigid. He had a very good idea of who Poirot is. And then Albert Finney, as much as I love him, that is a much broader performance.
Broader by several feet. Yes.
And here, Brana is somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. not doing much because he's putting all the mm-hmm. attention onto that mustache. Mm-hmm. Mustache right. is doing 90% of the work.
It's solving all the crime.
A lot of mustache.
Yeah. And also, this is not a spoiler, there are action scenes in this film, which I think is what they're trying to take advantage of. Well, we can. And that's never the right question. Can we? It should be, should you?
Should.
Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't make any sense.
This movie, for the most part, could have been made in 1954 and been the exact same movie. Mm-hmm. I think there's like one joke about Rosé that was like au courant. Mm-hmm. And I do wish that if they'd been picking one or the other for famous Agatha Christie movies to remake, Death on the Nile is a much, much more dynamic story and a much more fun adaptation. With an equally wonderful ending that's less famously known.
Mm-hmm. I was also a little bit frustrated for many of the same reasons. This is, as you said, Barry, a very, very famous ending. And as much as I often will go into these things like trying to be like a newborn baby and have no idea what's going to happen, I'm sitting there the entire time knowing what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And in a murder mystery, the puzzle is so much of the fun. Mm-hmm. And it's not that it's impossible to remake a movie where everybody knows the ending and have it be fun. But I wasn't engrossed by it enough not to be distracted by my knowledge of what was going to happen. I also think the Brana performance as Poirot, he tries to give him a backstory
and that is
alluded to but never adds up to anything. Yeah. It felt like Cliff's notes of emotional heft. Mm-hmm. I was very frustrated by. I was frustrated by any efforts at kind of decosification, anything that gets you out of the story and gets into like a kind of a fist fight on a bridge. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that? What is that doing there? I did enjoy the fact that your initial review, Barry, was I like trains.
Right. No, I know. I mean, it's about as sophisticated as I like trains. Like, I thought about it. I was like, I could almost have brought my 6-year-old to this because he likes Thomas too.
I was going
to say, it's Thomas with a mustache.
I think this you might have had this,
which
same...
I think is Percy. Anyway, sorry.
It is Percy.
Derek Jacobi as Topham Hatt.
But at the same time, if you take this movie out of the theatrical experiences, beautiful, it's very beautifully shot. It's shot on like 65mm. Mm-hmm. It's very, very,
it
very...
was shot? I thought it was just created by like computer keys.
Well, it looks it. Yeah.
It's very shiny and pretty. Yeah. But if you take that and just superimpose it into your living room on a winter afternoon in a recliner with a bunch of blankets, it does still have some of that, coziness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
There's also a smattering of race stuff in here with a Leslie Odom Jr. character, but it is not addressed in any real way. It is just sort of there.
That's the Rosé joke. That's
the
Rosé.
And it's just, it's not, I felt like it needed more or less, and it's right hovering in this sort of Schrodinger's cat not working kind of thing.
Right,
Okay, well, before we started taping, we had a little debate around the microphones. Mm-hmm. Is this
it
movie
got ugly, people?
Got ugly, as it so
I'm
often does
a tooth.
With this group of vicious, vicious monsters. of whether this movie qualifies as quote a cozy mystery, Margaret. What is a cozy mystery?
Take it away, Margaret.
So, cozy mysteries are a particular genre of mystery that's marketed by publishing houses now. And I feel like they started sometime around Lillian Jackson Braun with The Cat Who, where she's like a murder mystery series where like a cat plays a major role in solving all of the crimes.
You
and there are like
say.
60 of them.
Yep.
If you're giving a very narrow definition based on commercial markets, it's like, it's a murder, but the murder is entirely incidental. You're basically in it to hang out with these same characters you know over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a very good chance that in the middle of the book, there's a recipe for blueberry scones included specifically for you to cook. Mm-hmm. Because the food and the material details of what's around you are almost more important than the, like, light crossword puzzle of violent death that's also embedded in there.
Which is never that violent. Right. It's like you're just getting like one stab wound and a gunshot wound to the head. It's always like execution style.
Or poisoning. Lots
right,
of poisoning.
Poisoning, or you've been like it's strangled by a gentle grandmother. Which is kind of what you could argue this film felt like.
One of my favorite cozy mystery death methods is killed by a magnum of champagne falling from the ceiling.
Oh, sure.
You know, classic.
Yeah.
If I gotta go, that's the way I'd
like
to
murder,
go.
It's like murder,
cozy,
murder slash accident.
I don't read a lot of cozy mysteries. I don't watch a lot of cozy mysteries, but I did some research for this episode.
Oh, did you? Glad.
I did. And I came across, tell me if you've heard of these shows, Margaret, or Barry.
Okay.
British television shows, one called Pie in the Sky, which combines murder and cooking.
I have not.
No.
A show called
amazing.
A show called Rosemary and Thyme, which
three
guesses.
I've heard of that.
Murder and gardening. So then just based on that, I typed in murder mystery knitting. Guess what?
Oh, God.
You'll never guess.
I'll never guess.
So I'm sensing a through line here, a theme, basically the pop culture happy hour demographic, I think. So
true.
Murder mystery and podcasts, I think, is the next.
Because you want to be able to sit in one spot. You know what I mean? Like, the idea is that you're listening to it. You're not moving. Like, if you have to do anything, it's really just to lift the tea kettle and, like, gently, you know, push it over. But yes, no, that's true.
Yeah.
But I will say the other thing about cozy mysteries, which is important and is the reason that I maybe am not, I do love them, but they're not my fave. They don't have a lot of sex in them. I mean, the other thing is it's not just no violence, it's like it's no sex. So now, you know, now you've taken away the part of the paying guests that I really love. You know what I mean? So that's tough. But that you can counteract that, say, with something like Foyle's War, in that Michael Kitchen just provides enough romantic juice to keep going, even if there is no sex. So I'm going to just say...
Or Grantchester.
Or Grantchester.
Detective Hotfinger, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Why is murder cozy?
Yeah.
I think it's the feeling of that. It's the thing that I really love about reading any book that is something I will hopefully generally not experience. Like, I love reading like Into Thin Air. It's the thing of this thing has happened. It is so far away from you. It's terrible. And you are warm and you are wrapped in your fur blanket. Mm-hmm. And you are it is the contrast that is so important. And some of it you can provide for yourself, like the blueberry pie and the fur blanket with the teddy other side. I just got a new blanket and I'm really excited about it. Anyway, the point being that those are things you can provide for yourself, but you don't have to provide the murder.
I think there might be something to the fact that this might be a reaction against the CSI-ification of murder mysteries, right?
Sure.
So where in those shows, because we can, again, because we have the technology, we can zoom in on the wound and look at the festering
how was he flayed?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So this is about none of that, because those shows are about the evidence. And in a very real sense, these cozy mysteries are about the people, about the motivations, are about community in a very real way. It's different, completely
That's a
different.
Very astute observation, Glenn.
Oh, heck.
I'd say the other thing that gives some murders a license to be cozy is you're spending time with the same group of characters over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And those relationships can shift minimally because they're not bearing the burden of creating plot. Right? Mm-hmm. You have a murder step into this community of known characters, and it provides the narrative momentum. And so then you can have these just like glacial shifts in how the characters you know are relating to one another. And so you'll get like Franny Fisher, where we have a murder every single episode, and then we have an incredibly like languorously paced love story. Just like a
and
real
sex.
Beautiful slow burn.
Right.
And sex.
Lots
of it.
That's probably my definition.
Glacial sex. Yeah. Yay.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Rapid fire sex,
kind.
Glacial romance.
Okay.
Totally different thing, Glenn.
Okay.
Because Franny is maybe going to get together with one guy, but she's not waiting around. She's also sleeping with a new guy every single episode.
Mm-hmm. So to be clear, we're talking about...
She's a liberated lady.
So to be clear, we're talking about Miss Fisher's murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is squarely in the Margaret Berry basket of jammies. You know?
Yeah.
So you should do that, guys. Should do it.
Okay, yeah, because I wanted to come out of this segment with a few recommendations. If Murder on the Orient Express isn't your bag, what should people be taking away in terms of a recommended cozy mystery?
I mean, the idea that there is anyone in the pop culture happy hour audience at this point who has an enthusiasm for mysteries and, like, hasn't seen Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries is baffling to me.
But you never know. I just learned to knit.
Folks.
You know?
Yeah. It is a liberated lady flapper who is solving crimes with the help of her well-mannered Catholic maid, and looking fabulous, sleeping with beautiful men, and having a slow burn romance with a tense but deeply honorable police constable.
Love it.
And if that's
also,
not your
hats.
Thing, I don't know what is.
That's true.
I like Columbo. I like trains.
Well, I actually, it's funny because that is how I mean, so we have a basement that we just took the mold out of, i.e. redid. And there is a TV down there and it only gets one channel and it's the Murder, She Wrote channel.
Oh, nice.
And so I realized I've actually created, you know how you can do dinner theater Murder on the Orient Express? I kind of created that in my basement, you know, like this is the Murder, She Wrote basement. And I thought about like putting little clues down there like, ooh, a necklace or...
Do you want me to move into your basement?
I do.
Just invite me.
I do. You are always invited. There's two bedrooms for many, many bossy ladies, bossy dames.
Oh, and,
but
wonderful.
So I really am a Murder, She Wrote. It makes me feel better. I can feel something healing when I'm watching it. Partly that's an Angela Lansbury thing. You are either in or out, and I am so far in, like in all the ways.
And gay Twitter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a real, again, a good.
I'm sorry. Angela Lansbury is an absolute good in the world.
Yes, she is. And it's
thank you.
And it's funny because, you know, it's not a brilliant show. Every mystery is telegraphed, but it is still, again, it is into the opposite of Murder on the Orient Express. Even if you know what's happening, it's still just a delight to watch her happening it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of. And then the other thing I just really foils for is so delightful, and Michael Kitchen is so wonderful, and I'm my eyes shut and I'm picturing his little waistcoat, and I just people, it's so delightful, and it's November. What are you doing?
Right.
Turn off the podcast in like 25 minutes,
yeah.
But you know, and then go watch one of these. It will
foils war.
And so this is a foils war. It is actually his war. You know, like, is that a good German or a bad German? And there's occasionally you have to go to a mansion, and he has these little sidekicks with curly hair and cuteness, and it's I can't even describe it because it's so delightful. And you can watch any of them at any time. Like, there's really no arc.
All right. Well, we want to know how you at home feel about Murder on the Orient Express, as well as your favorite cozy mystery. Find us. I have a feeling people will have opinions.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you all on Friday.